Okay, final hour with Gerald Epling as we talk about memory, his book, Treasure of the Mind. We're going to take your phone calls in just a moment. Some of you have been hanging on for a long time. I'll get right to you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Years ago when you were on the program, Gerald, you talk about ways to make water taste better. Remember that?
I remember that. And at that time, I was a little concerned because I wasn't sure that it was totally safe. And I always, it's just the scientist in me. I want to make sure that it is safe. So over the past several years, I've found ways to treat water with certain types of energies and with magnetism. And the magnetism is the one that I think I'll be able to produce, that people will be able to actually take wine and put it through what is like an aging process, only much more rapidly, and to take water and to make water taste a bit sweeter. And all of these things, every study I've done shows there is no negative side effect to anything that I've tested it on, not to plants, not for people. It seems to actually make things taste better and be more enjoyable. So I've got a website called wineager.com, and now I'm putting together the parts to make the wineager, and fairly soon I hope to be actually producing the wineager, which would also help make water taste sweeter, and get that out to people so they can enjoy it.
Is it all energy?
It is. It's energy, and it's a matter of taking complex structures, water with minerals in it and things like that, or wine with the tannins in it and other things, and just reorganizing them so that they're more palatable and they're just more enjoyable to take. The plants actually take up the water that's been treated in this way and grow with less water. They use less water to grow as normal plants would, and they look very healthy.
I like that. Yeah. Interesting. You could keep it out there in gardens or something, huh?
You could.
Let's go to Victoria, Texas. Johnny's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Johnny, go ahead.
Hey, George. Love your show, man.
Thanks, John.
And wanted to talk to Gerald a little bit about autism.
Okay.
I have twin boys.
Yeah.
Identical twin boys with autism, and their brains are fantastic. I've learned so much from them. And I wanted to get Gerald's input on what he thinks might be causing autism since it's on the rise.
I can't really offer a good opinion of what I think is causing it. It would probably be beyond the scope of what I should be doing here on the air. I do have just maybe a couple of questions thinking educationally about your boys. Your mother's there with them, or their mother is with them, yes?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So when mom gives them a hug, do they respond, or do you kind of give them, does she give them a hug and they just kind of don't really hug her back?
This is a funny thing, Gerald. One loves compression and hugs, and the other one don't. Even though they're identical twins, their autisms are almost mirrored differences of
right.
each other.
That's often an indicator of what you're going to have to work with going forward. It's sometimes the kid needs a lot of hugs before they hug you back. It's like they're, I'm not talking about your child right now, but just speaking generally about some children that I've seen with autism, it seems to me that they're just not aware that they're really being hugged. And, you know, it's kind of hard to work through that. You just have to keep doing it, keep loving them, keep working with them. And, you know, I'm big on gardening. I like gardening. Sometimes I can't help but think that some children might be helped by having a little garden, planting things, tending it, and then seeing how they respond. It's hard to know what the trigger will be.
My wife has a garden. They may help with the garden, and it's so cool because when they pick something, they'll thank the plant.
Yeah.
And pick the fruit for the vegetable. And when we went to the hospital one time, and real quick, they second floor, they both went up one time. The second time, they know exactly where to go on that second floor and the exact door to go to for speech therapy. And we couldn't find the rooms. You know, we just let them go, and they find it for us.
They know where they're going. Yep. It's great memory. It really is.
It really is.
What about animals, dogs, cats? What kind of memory do they have?
Animals, dogs, and cats, they're fascinating, the memories they have. A cat will get to a point where it's self-aware after a few years. If you put a little lipstick above its eyebrow and show it a mirror, it might reach out and touch the mirror, wondering why that cat has lipstick on its above its eyebrow. Eventually, the cat will get to a point where it sees the lipstick above its eyebrow and it reaches up and starts to wipe it off. So they have memory that is not so much self-aware as just memory of events and things that they do, which is kind of fascinating when you think about it. Children often go through different phases where they have a lot of self-awareness, and then they have awareness of things outside themselves, and then they have to find the balance of the two, what's inside them, what's outside them. And it's a fascinating thing. The memories of animals, I sense they're visual. I've talked with some people who say they're sensitive to the memories of animals, and they feel like the animals actually have very good visual memory.
Next up, we go to Jay in Tampa, Florida. Jay, thank you for holding. You're on with us. Hey, Jay? Well, he literally fell asleep.
He did. Missed the chance.
He was on hold almost an hour.
Oh.
He's probably got the phone on. It's just, we got to keep that. That's an all-time classic.
The keeper.
I'll always remember that, and also the I went to a phone call and the toilet flushed right when we went to it. He was on hold for about 30 minutes too.
Oh.
Hey, that happens, you know?
Sure.
That happens. God, I should have kept the snoring on. We should have kept them on for a while. Barbara in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hello, Barbara.
Yes, hello. How are you today?
Good. You're not snoring. Go ahead.
I'm wide awake.
Yes, you are.
I have a quick story and a quick question.
Sure.
The story that I never forgot is a few years ago, a friend of mine who lives just in Eugene, Oregon, he was traveling up to the Willamette Forest, which he often does, and he decided to take a little break, and he was lying on a little bridge there. And all of a sudden, a big, huge elemental being, like a big gnome, about 30 feet high, he said, walked and stomped across the bridge back and forth, scared the daylights out of him. And he went to hide under the bridge, hoping he wouldn't be seen. But I never forgot that, because it just showed me how that the beings who take care of the trees are very sensitive and are very upset about what mankind's doing, not thinking about how they're affecting nature. And I think that a lot of people don't realize that nature really does respond to us. And so my question might be is, don't you think that a lot of these things that are going on the planet have to do with nature trying to bring balance and to restore what mankind's done to assault the earth?
Hmm.
Well, there's a book that I have. It's written, it's edited by a fellow named Velikovsky.
Oh, yeah. Emmanuel Velikovsky.
I was looking at different one. Velikovsky came to mind, but I was also thinking of one by Volkov.
Volkov, okay.
Plant Electrophysiology. And in this book from 2006, he talks about the responses of plants to all sorts of things. Sunlight, bad air, good air, herbicide, nutrition. The plants respond to it all. It's right there. So there's an active record of what's going on every day. So sure, I think that there is a relation, and it's easy to read if you have the right instruments, and sometimes it takes some time, but it's there to be read.
Give me the difference in layman's terms between cognitive approach and behavioral.
Oh, I love that. That's one of my favorite differences to explore. A behaviorist looks at behavior as the answer for everything. And so if you talk to a behaviorist, talking is just considered a behavior. Doesn't matter what you say, it's just something you're doing. All they want to do is get you to behave or do something. A cognitivist, if you talk to a cognitivist, they tend to think that words have meaning and that you may be saying something important and that it's okay to think. Now, it's amazing. You can accomplish a lot of things just with a behavioral approach, but it really leaves out the higher order functions. So I think the cognitive revolution, which started 50s or 60s, quite a while ago, I think we really need to enjoy the fruits of that and try to have, if we're going to have a behavioral approach, maybe it should be a cognitive behavioral approach. The people who seem to have the worst time in psychology that I've come across of picking up some of these subtle things are people who are very stuck in the behavioral mindset. And I think it's time to be cognitivists.
Are there clinics that try to help you with your memory?
I don't know of a clinic that specifically focuses on memory, but that, you know, that would be really good.
I think so, too.
You know, I find that...
Open up a whole chain of them.
Sure, sure.
The memory shop or something like that.
Right, because there are a number of things you can do.
Next up, we go to Bill, Chandler, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Bill, good morning. You're on with us.
No, I'm just kidding. That was pretty cool. I won't forget
that was funny. Hey,
thanks a lot, you guys, for taking my call. Memory is so cool. It's been so cool to me. My mom was always big on memory when I was little, and it's really helped me be who I am as a scientist. But what I'm calling today about is my dad used to smoke menthol cigarettes. And when I was little, I had a dream or two about minty-tasting something, and cigarettes it ended up being in my head, and I didn't realize till like maybe I'm like 50, and I didn't realize till like about 20 years ago when this came to me that I knew I had the memory of my dad, I believe, through my, I don't know, my sperm, I guess, and it stayed with me. Before I even knew what a cigarette was, I could taste that. Have you ever heard of that, Gerald?
Absolutely. Those are the sort of memories that a child would have. I happen to have had an 18-month-old memory of visual imagery and people and the environment. But yes, there's a lot of things that you know as a child, and you know it because you experience it, but you haven't made a connection with it to see where it goes.
What about cellular memory, Gerald?
That is an interesting thing. There are a couple of aspects of cellular memory that I find interesting. Probably one of the more useful ones is that you can take a cell from a person, perhaps blood or leukocytes, and put them in one area, and then as the person moves away from that area, if they experience a big emotional stress or an event, you can actually read the cell responding to the host that it came from. You can see the person's having distress.
I mean, there's no doubt the cells have memories, organs have memories.
Right.
You know, and there's always, and this is the classic, you get a donated body part from somebody, a dead person, whatever. Some people claim that they take that memory of that person, whoever it might have been.
There are a lot of reports of that. And that wouldn't that be strange, you know, to start having a vision of something and it turns out it's the death of the donor?
Well, there's a movie about somebody who had a murderer's body parts put in them.
Ooh.
And they could see and recollect the actual murders
that
this person had done. It was a great movie.
Huh.
But I forgot the name of it.
It may have had a dark element, George.
I always remember a friend of mine. She had a horrible memory.
Oh.
And she saw on television a bunch of DVDs on memory improvement. She got all excited, but she forgot the toll-free number.
Oh.
Those days, they didn't have the computers. Let's go next to Dixie in Eden, Utah, first-time caller. Hello, Dixie.
Hi, George. Hi, Gerald.
Hi.
So happy that I got through. Hey, I wanted to, couple things. I wanted to share a memory. When I was probably 9 or 10 years old, I told my mom, "Oh, Mom, I remember when you were building this house, and I remember the red and white car, and you opened and you had Kentucky Fried Chicken and you fed all the workers." And I just was, you know, very detailed in the memory. And my mom looked to me and she said, "Who told you that?" And I said, "What do you mean, who told me that? I was there." And she said, "Dixie, all of that happened before you were born." So as I've reviewed that memory, I remember literally sitting on, like, it felt like a retaining wall. And it would have had to been in the neighbor's yard because I was, you know, kind of that distance away. And of course, you know, everything's dimensional. So I literally know that I was watching where I was coming. And it's been interesting because now in my adult life, I've become an intuitive life coach and an energy therapist. And it's really amazing how I have brought, you know, dimensional things through and was doing it as a child.
So do you still like to preview things before they happen?
Absolutely. It happens quite a bit. It happens quite a bit. And I'm the eternal optimist, so the cool thing is I only see good, happy things.
Good for you.
All right. Hey, thanks, Dixie. Appreciate that. I remember my dad and my mother, whenever we went to the doctors, and, you know, we must have been about, I was about 10 or 11, they would always stop at this little place that a lot of people know of now, White Castle Hamburgers.
Yeah.
They were 12 cents a piece. 12 cents a piece. But I will always remember my dad going in there, picking up a bag full of them, and coming back. That was like the big treat of the century.
Those are great memories. They really are.
12 cents. I wonder how many you could buy for 12 cents nowadays.
Huh? Oh, I have no idea. I don't think many.
I don't know how far 12 cents would go anymore. Let's go to Thousand Oaks, California. Marilyn's turn on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the program. Hello, Marilyn.
Thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome.
I wanted to tell you briefly a story from a girlfriend of mine back in the 80s and also see what you think of it. She was having a lot of problems, a lot of psychological problems, because she had a recurring I don't know if it was a vision or a nightmare or what, but she kept having this recurring something where she thought she was being beat up, and she had never been beat up as far as she knew, and she was seeing a therapist, and it was really bothering her. And then at some point she went back and saw her mom and told her mom about it, and her mother sort of went, ooh. And she said, you better sit down. And she told her when she was pregnant with her, her dad was in the military, and he went over, I guess, to Vietnam. He went to war anyway, and or he went in the service somewhere. And she had to go stay with her parents. And her dad was really a mean guy. And at one point, when her mother was pregnant with her, her dad beat her mother up. And that was the memory that little unborn baby had of being beat up.
Yeah, those memories, they don't often come through in such a way that they can be cognitively aware, but that memory, it happens. The blood chemistry changes. It's tough on the baby. And with an abused mother, it's tough on the baby. It really is at a lot of levels, and it's difficult to get over.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Tell us about the book, Treasure of the Mind. Is it still available, Gerald?
It's not yet available. I've had sort of a going back and forth whether I should revise Treasure of the Mind or write a new book. And I started writing about biphasic experiences because I saw what I was doing was always coming back to the excitement aspect of memory, because it's so important. Unless you have a little bit of adrenaline kick in to stamp that memory, you won't have the memory. So I leave Treasure of the Mind as a good example of what I was doing at the time and the scientific basis of the theory of memory formation that I have. But I'm going to move on and write this biphasic memory experience book and get that out. That's my next move, because I think that will help more people than an expansion on a theoretical book. The theory is good, and a lot of people are excited when they read Treasure of the Mind, and they realize that they should study this way or that way.
All right, hold on for a second, Gerald. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to come back in just a moment, take final phone calls with Gerald Epling on our next Coast to Coast program, Friday into Saturday morning. I'll be out on assignment. John B. Wells filling in for me, so make sure you're part of the show. And welcome back, Gerald Epling, with us, your phone calls. Gerald, how did you get interested? How did you get involved in memory like this?
I think it just came to me as a child. I began to wonder why people didn't have good memories. And over time, it turned out that I had a little bit better memory than a lot of other people that I experienced in my life. So then I began to wonder, what else is different? Do they see the same colors that I see? So I studied color. I would ask people, is that red? Is that green? And all of this was as a child. And it just became fascinating, the different varieties of experience that people have in life.
All right, back to the calls we go. Skype, we go to Anand in Purdue. Welcome to the program, Anand.
Hello, George. Hello,
hey.
Gerald.
Thank you for calling.
Good to talk to you.
You too.
Oh, my pleasure. Listen, I have a couple of comments and a question for you. The first one is regarding your question, George. Would we feel bad or should we feel bad if we're aware that, you know, the grass is feeling us cutting it?
Yes.
Well, down here, I work with quite a few shamans, and as you probably know, the plants actually communicate and let you know how to use them and what should be done. So they are conscious, and we know that they're, by experiments, that they do feel, a plant will feel its other half being tortured, even if miles away. But you never have to feel bad if you approach it with respect. You see, they all have a purpose to serve, as we do. And we can't anthropomorphize and give them the pain or the kind of feelings we would project. So it's pretty okay for us to use the vegetable kingdom, but approaching it with respect. Before you cut a tree down, if you must, to ask for permission and, you know, thank it. And it's cool. Just a little point so that you can rest at ease next time you mow your lawn.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Anand. Well, you know what? It does give you a different perspective, Gerald, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. It does. I think it's a good way to look at it. The plants do seem to know where they sit, and they have a purpose. They want to accomplish their purpose.
All right, back we go. Carol in Lawndale, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Carol. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I just wanted to pass on that at a year old, I broke my neck, and I can remember going to the hospital and laying on this massive slab and then this big white machine coming over me and them holding my chin up while they x-rayed me and putting on a cast on my neck and my torso like a turtleneck sweater. And from then on, I have a very good memory of places, times, smells, peoples, and occurrences. And I'm just figuring because it was a shock that at such a young age that I remember things.
Wow, that is an excellent story. It totally makes sense. It sits with everything we know about memory formation. You have the energy breaking your neck. My goodness, that's traumatic. Yeah.
Because I broke it again when I was 10. I broke a lot of bones.
Oh, ouch. But you turned it to your advantage. Now you have a better memory.
Right, and I'm really pleased about it. And I talk to people today, and it's something that I remember 10 years ago or so with them. And they're amazed that I still remember those things. And I'm just happy that I still have my good memory.
Good
All
for
right,
you.
Thanks. Hey, how do you categorize deja vu, Gerald? What is that?
Deja vu is almost, well, it's like an understanding of what you have in your life experience. It's a revisiting of something that you knew was
it memory?
I think it's memory.
Maybe from a past life, maybe from something. I don't know.
Maybe from a past life. I think we've all had it where we see something coming and we know what it is. We know what's going to happen. It's like you've seen it before, that feeling of deja vu, seeing it again.
All right, we go next to Rose in Long Beach, California. Hey, Rosie, go ahead.
Hi, I have a question about what the difference between selective memory is or just being unconscious and unaware when someone is communicating with you or if you're experiencing something.
Well, that's a good question. Selective memory, Gerald.
Well, selective memory is something that some people have, like the child that just ate the cookie in the cookie jar. That's one form of selective memory. Did you eat the cookie in the cookie jar? What cookie? Where? I don't remember a cookie. Is that the sort of selective memory you're thinking about?
More like forgetting people's names after meeting them or just not always knowing certain details. Like, for example, my boyfriend and I had a very special night, our first kiss. I completely forgot about it when he asked me about it, and that kind of upset me, and it upset him. So I just kind of wanted to see what could be the cause of that, whether it's a selective memory or just me being unconscious.
Well, maybe you were conscious, maybe the experience was wonderful, but it was timeless.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you don't have an exact time in your memory. There are a lot of components of memory. The temperature of the air, the humidity, the lighting, things like that. It may be that you remembered a number of things, but not just the date. Or could that be a possibility?
Gerald, is memory bio, as you talk about, or is it energy? What might it be?
Well, there's the life component of it, and life is hard to describe because you can't describe it as just a bunch of chemicals that never works. It always pulls up short. So memory is a part of life. There's a memory written in a record that we can't easily read, the memory and the life force, and that is the environment that you're in is part of your memory. You can go back to the environment, and it can trigger memories that you didn't know you had. Mood can trigger memories if you're in the right mood. There are a lot of different components of memory. We can describe the characteristics, but I tend to focus on the electromagnetic field and how it exists in space-time and basically space-time in the electromagnetic field. It's like something that happens that still stays.
What about the supplements to help your memory, like ginkgo?
Ginkgo, I like ginkgo. I think ginkgo's great. There are studies that suggest that it's good for people who have Alzheimer's. There were other studies done years ago that suggested that it was good for a lot of people to help them with memory. In my opinion, it helps you have good rapid blood flow, and the blood flow carries the energy to the parts of the brain and would make the scans light up if the blood was flowing to the right areas. So I think ginkgo's good that way. Phosphatidylserine is big. It's huge. It's so important. It helps you in so many ways, especially with the membrane of the neurons to help you have a good, healthy brain. And there are other supplements that I think I'm going to be putting together and trying to make available to people to help them have better memories.
That would be great.
I think people could enjoy it. I know I have some things that I do that really help me, and I'm looking around and seeing that they seem to be very safe things to do. So why not?
Let's go to Tom, Austin, Texas, first-time caller. Hello, Tommy.
Hello, sir. How you doing?
Good, Tom.
I'd like to say hello. Thank you for taking my phone call. And I've been listening to you for about 3 or 4 years. I'm 29 years old. I'm just wanted to tell you about the memory part.
Sure.
My brother, he is 42, and you know I've been taking care of him ever since I was can remember. Okay. Now he has a grand mal seizure disorder, supposedly. He's diagnosed. Also has him uncontrollably. They can't stop him. They can't slow him down. Okay. However, he has gotten this new medication. I don't know if it has it to do with his memory, but it's slowed down his memory. but it's slowed down the seizures even more.
It's a trade out, I guess, huh?
What's that?
It's a trade out.
Yeah. And to me, I don't believe, like my friend, he like backs it, and to relate this to the plants, and he has a place that he owns. I don't know if I can allowed to mention it, but you can see the watermelon growing in the window when you enter in the store. And that's in a separate room also. But anyway, it's beautiful. It's to see something growing. He claims that if my brother was to eat more fruit and more vegetables, which my brother does, the fruit's no way. And, no matter how much I encourage him, I cannot get him to eat it because I'm also his personal care attendant now. So, he has the sharpest memory in the world. He doesn't have too much of a great diet. I would say he prays every night, but I would say that he wears a cross he will not take off.
So what would you do, Gerald, to start getting someone to have a better memory?
Right. Well, actually, for better memory, fruits are a really good suggestion. They really are. You get the fiber with a fruit. Watermelon has an awful lot of sugar. I'm not sure I'd start with that. You have to always watch and see how people will respond with the blood glucose levels. You can get diabetic testing kits, even if you're not diabetic, and monitor your blood glucose and see what's happening inside your body when you start to add fruits. grapes and watermelons are high in sugar. They're very tasty. But if he has any sugar problems, this could be not so good. Cantaloupe might be a better choice. Apples are wonderful. If you could get him to eat some of these things, I would think that it might help his memory. Yeah, that'd be a great idea. Vegetables, green leafy vegetables, mustard greens, collard greens, romaine lettuce, anything along those lines. Has he tried a papaya? Do you think he'd like a papaya?
Papaya's not bad, as long as it's not a GMO, huh?
Right. Right. I think papaya is awfully good.
Let's go to Susan, Asheville, North Carolina, as the clock is going to get us now. Go ahead, Susan.
Thank you for taking my call. I hope this is okay to ask this, but I had a concussion 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
I just went back to the doctor today. I have no memory of what happened. All I know is a best friend showed up at my house on Wednesday 2 weeks ago, and I was just covered in blood coming from my head, and she wanted to take me to the emergency room, and I was saying no, 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 and she did not, and I just kept going back to sleep and back to sleep. I said, please, I asked her to call, and I said, please call me every few hours so I won't go into a coma or something.
Yeah, well, that's dangerous. Now, in a situation like that, Gerald, when you lose memory, you lose it with some kind of trauma.
Yeah, with the trauma, you've got, you can lose memory just after the event, and that's concerning with a concussion, but you can also lose memory before the event, which is probably more of a concern than losing memory, you know, just after the concussion. So you just put it in your mind next time you just go to the emergency room. It's a good idea if you have blood on you and you don't remember things.
Is it normal after trauma to forget something or not have any recollection?
Very normal. It's not unusual at all, especially with concussion. Most people will lose a little bit of time out of their life with that concussion. The amount of time is usually related to how long they were unconscious. There are other factors that figure in. But it's good that you're getting medical care. That's what you need to do. That's what you need to do for sure.
All right. Next up, we go to Jim, truck driving in Connecticut. Hey, Jimmy, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going, Joe? It's long time no talk to.
Thank you, sir.
You know, you went right into what I wanted to talk about is a repressed memory. I was abducted in the Air Force, and for 23 years after that, I smoked crack cocaine trying to self-medicate myself.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And then I went to a doctor, and she said, were you sexually molested in the Air Force? And it, like, ripped the sheet away from the in my mind, where it opened up my memories, where I remembered what happened to me. So you were just talking about that type of thing, and it's funny how you were just talking about it, but I'll tell you, it was rough. It was rough. I ended up falling on all fours as I walked home, and I looked up, and there was the preacher from the previous Sunday, the first time I'd been to that church, and he was walking towards me on the sidewalk, and it was unbelievable. It's like God's protected me through all these years, and now, of course, you know, I'm doing Roger Reloaded. And talk about memory. You want to talk about memory. You got to memorize all that stuff. But anyways, can you tell me about repressed memories? What do you think about them, sir?
Well, repressed memories are usually, it's a defense mechanism when you have a difficulty dealing with a situation. A childhood sexual abuse may lead to repressed memories because as a child, you have no control over the situation.
Huge.
Yeah, it's not your cause, but you can't do anything, so the memory gets repressed and pushed back. That's just one example of repressed memory.
It's a protective mechanism, isn't it?
It is. It's a protective mechanism. It's good to work with a therapist to work through something like that.
Sometimes maybe it's not right, Gerald, to pull out that old past, is it?
I have no problems with having a good life now and going forward. If it's not causing you problems, why don't you leave it alone? That's one approach that I've often used. But, you know, it could be that you're not enjoying life as much as you would. If you still have energy being tied up in that, then it's probably a good idea to get some help and deal with it.
Let's go to Kat in Fort Worth, Texas. Hey, Kat, go ahead.
Hey, my father was a physician for 50 years, and in 2006, he developed Alzheimer's. And what was really bizarre is he could not tell you what he ate 5 minutes ago or even what he did, but he could tell you something that happened in 1945, 1976. He could tell you anything and everything that happened then, but he couldn't tell you, he couldn't even read a newspaper. He was severely impaired. I was just wondering, I thought it was remarkable. I was just wondering about that.
There are a lot of long answers, but I'm going to try to give you a really quick answer. The hippocampal formation ends with the amygdala at the end, and the amygdala is part of your emotional circuitry, so is the hippocampal formation. But the hippocampus is what helps you form new memories. It is possible to have a damaged hippocampus and damage in the area around the hippocampal formation and be able to recall memories but not lay down new memories. And it is certainly a part of the body that is ravaged by Alzheimer's is the hippocampal formation. So this may be just the normal progression of the disease with your father.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. Gerald, only have about a minute and a half left or so. I'd like to just wrap this up. What is MindJava.com?
MindJava.com. That's where I put my scholarly papers. Like I replicated Cleve Baxter's study with an egg where he monitors one egg and drops another egg into boiling water and sees the response. And I presented that at the Psychonomic Society in 2005, 2006. So that will be posted there. And my theory of the mind in a very scholarly technical write-out is available at MindJava.
And the course, what's next for you? What's the future?
What's next? I want to get this biphasic book going, get it out on Amazon so people can get a hold of it, then go back and rework Treasure of the Mind to line it up with the biphasic story, stories how to make good memories and really make them happen for you. And then to get this Wineager out and some good memory formulas, some things that people can take, nutraceuticals that can help them make really good memories and have a better life.
I think so, too. All right. Thanks a lot. Gerald, always a pleasure, okay?
Always a pleasure. Thank you, George.
Gerald Epling. Had him on with me back in March of 2008, so 5 years ago. It's amazing how fast time flies when you're really having fun. Gerald Epling, his website's linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Will Wilkerson, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Timothy Benall, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.